Are you ready? Rock, rock. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite podcast about nu metal. This is the PODcast. This is episode 20. And this is an episode that features a band that features a singer that I was very comfortable interpreting for the opener. You know, sometimes when I say the hello, everyone, and I try to mimic the lead singer, it doesn't go so well, or it's very hard to do. But in this case, very easy, because this month we are reviewing Godsmack's self-titled debut album, Godsmack. And with me, as always, is a man who makes sure that I never stand alone. It's Brian Quinby.
I like that. That's that's my favorite part of the album. My daughter had to listen to this album twice today.
Yeah. Yeah, you said that.
16 years old, baby.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know, you know, I don't want to, you know, peek behind the curtain too much here for people, but often you go on long walks. That's kind of your thing, pardon me. And you, that's usually when you do your album listening. But today, you took your daughter to get vaccinated. You said it was an hour and a half away from your house.
Yep.
And so she just had to bear the brunt of the voodoo, as it were.
Yeah, it's great. Basically, if you live in Ohio and you want to get the vaccine, you just have to find a Republican district, you know, like something like between one of the three major cities in the state, and you can get it. You just got to be able to drive an hour out of town. And that's how I got it. So
beautiful.
It was great. Yeah. I actually went to a Tim Hortons while we were out there. Yeah, out in the middle of nowhere, there was a Tim Hortons by where we went and got
that the seems thing. Insane to me. Like, I knew that there were some in like New York and stuff, but I had no idea that there was ones in Ohio.
John, I'm gonna blow your fucking mind. There's two Tim Hortons within less than a mile of my house.
What?
I can go to two Tim Hortons.
Well, maybe I did know that. I feel like maybe we have actually talked about that on the podcast before, but do they call it
I think we talked about it on Blocked Party.
Oh, that might be right. I know that in America, some of them are called like Tim's Deli or something like that. Is that what it is called down there? It's actually Tim Hortons.
No, these are Tim Hortons. I would call it Tim's Deli if that's what they call it. I'm very, I like to use the actual real name.
You're very proper. You're very proper that way. Yeah.
Yeah, like when a wrestler changes his name because he got signed or something, I use the name he changed it to.
Right.
You know, because I'm just, that's the kind of guy I am.
No, and I respect that. That's for sure. So what did you get at the Tim Hortons in America? Do they do like everything up here, like sandwiches and donuts and all that stuff?
Yeah, I got 20 Timbits.
Nice.
And then a medium coffee, which is much smaller than Starbucks Grande.
Yeah.
Which was a bummer to me. I would have got a large if I had known it was so small.
Yep.
And then my daughter got a vanilla donut and a bagel with cream cheese. And a woman walked in behind me without a mask on, and she got kicked the fuck out of the store, and it was amazing to see. I fucking loved it.
Nice. Was it like, did she put up a fight, or when they said you're out, she just left?
Yeah. And so I tipped $5 on my food because that lady kicked that non-masked lady out because, you get out into the middle of nowhere around here, man. People aren't too fond of the masks or the vaccines and stuff. So it was just kind of funny that like she probably has gotten away with it a million times. And just this time it was like, nope, I'm not putting up with it.
Nice.
And I loved it.
So is that why you were able to get the vaccine there? Because people who live there don't want it.
Yeah, that's basically what goes on. It's very
oh my god,
Yeah, it's very weird. It's like that's how I got the vaccine over in where I got it done too. Was like it was just in a part of town where you drive by Trump. People still have Trump flags flying outside of their houses. And you're like, well, this isn't going to be, this is where I'm getting it, you know, because nobody wants the fucking thing out here.
That's wild. I mean, in Canada, we're like falling all over each other to get it. So, and I mean, that's not, I'm not saying that there aren't anti-vaxxers here in Canada, because there certainly are, but it's a bit of, and we also have less of it than you guys do. So that's, you know, scarcity breeds that. But I do think there is a fairly overwhelming sentiment here of like, we want to get the vaccine, please give it to us, you know, kind of thing.
I know that's what's the huge hassle is like, if you guys had the kind of rednecks we have, you would just be able to go right down to a CVS and just get it.
Yeah.
You know,
the thing that I found weird, I had an interaction with a woman, about this at work, and it was like a weird, I would say she's like probably in her mid 40s maybe, and she was like, she said to me something like, we were talking about the vaccine because I got it this week, and a lot of the teachers in my district this week were able to get vaccinated, so she was getting it as well, and she was sort of like, yeah, you know, like obviously I'm gonna get it, but she's like, you know, I've never really trusted vaccines. And I'm like, never? I'm like, never? I'm like, you're in your mid 40s. I'm like, how many vaccines do you currently have? Probably a lot. Like, you probably have measles and mumps and rubella and tetanus and hepatitis. And I'm like, you know, and so what? I was like, in like 1987, when you were 10, you were like, I don't know if I want to get the tetanus booster, mom. Like, that's the part that I find very funny is like, people seem to, and not that this podcast is not a COVID podcast. Don't worry. We're going to get to Godsmack in a second, but it's like, I find that part of it weird where people will talk in these like absolutes, like, yeah, I just really don't trust vaccines. And I never have. It's like, what are you talking about? That's like a last 5 years of life phenomenon. No one in 1995 was like, I don't know if I trust vaccines really.
Never heard that when I was growing up. Never heard somebody like give it grief. I'm actually watching The Shield for the first time, which is the best TV show ever made. I gotta tell you.
Yeah, it's just, I've never seen it.
It's fantastic. It's
what's
so,
that one? What's the, I feel like I always mix up about, that one with The Wire. I haven't seen either one
it's
of them.
About, but. Well, this is, it's way different from The Wire. It's like about cops in LA.
Okay.
That are like, you know, dirty. They're all dirty cops. Okay. And they're always like trying to spin their way out of trouble. But there is like a anti-vax storyline in one of the seasons where their son has autism and they're like suing the company that makes the vaccines. And like, it's heavily, it's said like, you know, these vaccines, they cause this. You know what I mean? And I was like, geez, that's fucking crazy.
Like on the show, they did like
a whole
story arc.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a couple like really weird, like, okay, that's a weird storyline to have in this series. It is like a pretty trashy show, but it's like one of the greatest. It's right. Like, you know, I like trashy shit though, you know?
Well, I know, like when you said it, I was like, I feel like that's just like a procedural show, but then also you said it was the greatest show ever. So I was like, oh, maybe it can't be that.
I've never watched a I don't watch anything that isn't like serialized for some reason. You know, when I watch TV, I want it to all fit together.
Right, sure.
And tell one cohesive story throughout the
season. And
seasons.
Especially if that story is about anti-vaccination, then you're really into the story.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is me. Is also, they're finally doing something for me.
It has the same, you know what, it has the same charm as Sons of Anarchy, which is the main characters are, in any world, would be considered the dumbest guy you know. But in this world, they're the smartest man in the world.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Like, I fucking love shows like that where it's just like, oh, my God, this guy's fucking stupider than shit. But then he's always like smiling after he's outsmarted everybody in the world.
That was the sense I got. I watched one episode of the show Burn Notice for a podcast, actually, like a Burn Notice rewatch podcast. And that's kind of like a similar vibe. It's like, what if Jason Bourne was the dumbest guy on earth? basically.
I love that shit. I just love, that's what Sons of Anarchy is, six seasons of just one of the dumbest men in the world outsmarting everybody. And I just am like, this is so good, because that means the guy that wrote it is one of the dumbest guys in the world.
Right. For sure. Yeah. It's like that fantasy, right? It's like you're watching it and you're like, I'm also dumb. Maybe this could be me.
If I wrote a TV show, the main character would be based on me, but I wouldn't tell people it was based on me, and he would be the smartest guy and the strongest guy and the most powerful guy in the whole universe of the show. For sure. I'm weak in that same way that the writers of The Shield or Burn Notice are. Right.
The producers would be like, look, you can't name the guy Brian. If you don't want people to think it's based on you, you should probably give him a different name. You're like, Ryan? No, Brian, you're not getting this. Ryan Quimby. No, Brian, it's not. I'm picturing
that's
it.
That's what
and
I would. I know. It would be the greatest show ever if they ever let me write like a real drama show. But I mean, you know what's funny is like talking about these real dumb guy shows is like the perfect segue into talking about Godsmack,
because
Godsmack might be the, I mean, okay, I'm gonna fucking do some guessing, you know, and say that David Draymond and Sully Erna have roughly the same IQs and it's low.
yes, but I think the difference between Sully and David is that like David's like book smart, like David's like the book smart Sully. Like, I don't think David is actually smart, but I feel like he could get an A on a university essay. And Sully could not even open Microsoft Word.
Like David Draymond could get the GED.
Oh, easily. Easily. He's a triple major, Brian. Okay.
None of them well, and none of them didn't graduate.
Yeah, so, no, I know.
But I mean, that does mean he's read some books and done some
math. It's just
math,
like
though.
You probably grew up with people who, like, I grew up with this one girl and you know, lovely girl. We were good friends and she got killer marks in school. I mean, we're like, she had like an above 90 average, got into UBC, which is not easy to do. And like common sense wise was the dumbest person I've ever met. Like the type of person who, like, you know, couldn't park a car, couldn't do a basic math, but like book smart as hell. Like it just, so that to me is like David Draymond. Like he's not a smart guy, obviously, but he could do smart guy stuff. Whereas like Sully, he knows facts. Exactly. Sully, Sully doesn't know a fact. Sully's never met a fact he liked. Before we get into the album, I do want to know, you know, we mentioned off the top of the show, your daughter, your 16-year-old daughter had to listen to this album twice today. What were her thoughts on Godsmack?
First statement she made is, if you think this sucks, then why are you singing all the songs?
And great, like, well, point.
I mean,
you're like, touche.
It rules. Yeah. She didn't like anything like it. I think she really tuned it out more than anything.
Right, sure.
And like, you know, cause she tried to carry on a conversation with me as I was like really enjoying Godsmack and, not a fan. Just, she doesn't like any of my,
right.
Okay. Like maybe one of these weeks or one of these months I will bring in, she has a playlist made for me and her, which is songs that we both like. Mm-hmm. And I'll have to get that playlist sometime and read off the songs on it because it's eclectic.
Right.
But it doesn't have any metal on it at all.
That's cute that you guys have your own playlist though. That's nice.
Yeah. It has one typo negative song.
Okay. Yeah. So that's fine. I feel like,
yeah, she put,
no, go ahead.
She put Black Number One on there because she thinks it's a goofy, silly song. And I'm like, oh, you should hear the rest of them. They're all goofy and silly. By Typo Negative's a goofy, silly band. But it's mostly like Ty Segall, The Black Lips, Harlem, Sturgill Simpson. It's like it's garage rock and country music heavy,
right?
Because that's what she likes,
right? That makes sense. Yeah, I feel like it's got to be confusing to her that she's like, so Dad, you listen to old music that makes no sense to me for your job.
Yeah, we talked about that too. She was like, I don't understand what you do when you do the POD cast. And it's like really hard to explain to a 16-year-old, like, just even what nu metal is.
Right.
Like,
sure.
The concept of what nu metal is. Cause it's like we listen to nu metal and she's like new albums by metal bands. And I was like, no, albums from like the late 90s, early 2000s. And she's like, okay. I was like, it was like a kind of music that existed that was like really popular for about 6 years and then fell off the map completely. But also influenced everything that came after it on rock radio, you know? And she was like, it's not very good. And I was like, I didn't say it was good. There's a reason it's not around anymore,
right?
But it fucking kicks ass. It actually just, do you know the difference between it's good and it kicks ass? Like it's like a high level good.
Yeah.
But it's not good.
No. You know? Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's like the Shield kicks ass. It's not good, yes. But it kicks ass. Yeah.
Yeah. It's- yeah. It's not something you would like go to bat for. Like, it's not something you could ever convince somebody to like.
Yeah.
I think the best
you either
way
like
to
it or you
it.
Don't. Yeah. Well, and nu metal's a weird one because there's not even like a touchstone you could point to where you can be like, oh, they're kind of doing like what nu metal did. Like, I know some of the like mumble rap guys say that they're influenced by that and stuff. And I know like Princess Nokia did a nu metal album, but like for the most part, there's not, you know, like I'm trying to think of like, we talk about disco on the show sometimes and how, you know, nu metal and disco had a similar like burn rate or whatever you want to call it, where it was huge for half a decade and then fell off the map. But the thing with disco is like it was rooted in pop music. So even into the 70s and 80s as disco, the late 70s and then into the 80s as disco was like dead or not popular or whatever, there was still a lot of disco influence in like huge pop songs. And then obviously now, like, you know, right now, modern pop is very disco influenced. And there's not really that kind of thing with nu metal, right? You can't, there's no big like rock band that you can point to and go, well, they're not exactly doing nu metal, but they're like borrowing it from it a little bit. Like that just doesn't exist. So it's even harder, I think, to explain because there's no sort of modern equivalent that you could make it easy for a teenager to understand.
I would also say that anybody under, say, I'll be generous and say anybody under, I don't know, 25 would have no connection to anything metal, basically, at all.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't a popular kind of, there wasn't something popular, you know, that was metal. That if they heard it, they heard it from their parents, they heard it from somebody else.
Yeah.
And, like, that's kind of the thing is, like, I mean, really, the age is probably 30, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm 35 and I started listening to Korn when I was like 12, 13. And that's because it was on the radio and on Much Music. And that's kind of the last time. So, yeah, if you think of people who are, I'll be 36 this year. So people who are 6 years younger than me would have been 7 when that was happening. So they probably weren't watching Much Music. They probably, yeah. So, I mean, you're probably right. It's probably somewhere in 25 to 30. And yeah, I think it's, you know, you're right. Like Guns N' Roses, Metallica, like big metal bands got played on the radio. And then obviously like Korn did and Limp Bizkit and, you know, and we haven't had that doesn't happen. Like Slipknot is a massive band, but they don't get played on rock radio. You know, like Disturbed maybe probably does, but like that's the limit of like how heavy of a thing you're going to hear on rock radio, I'm guessing.
I would also say that rock radio is not a metric to judge anything by, because I don't think anybody under 20 listens to any radio.
If
one of these songs went fucking bonkers on, like if All in the Family would, bad choice because Zoomers would hate it because of all the slurs and stuff in it, but if one of these songs went viral on TikTok, they would then, you would then be able to explain, like, this is what heavy metal is, or this is what nu metal is. But just this stuff hasn't happened yet. And I'm betting it will happen at some point. One of these TikTok influencers is going to discover Korn or something like that. And it'll then kids will get interested. Cause I know for like 2 or 3 years ago, my daughter was into ICP. Because an ICP song went viral on TikTok.
Right.
And she was like, what is this? You know what I mean? What's this? And would listen to a few songs by ICP. And that's kind of rock radio now. I mean, the fucking thing is, man, is that like, I'm like even just amazed that my daughter listens to any rock music.
Yeah.
You know,
there's no big rock bands anymore.
Yeah. And they're, so they're like listening to alt rock from the 2000s, you know. Yeah. My daughter's favorite band is The Strokes. And it's like, okay, like The Strokes is after nu metal.
Oh yeah. You know? Oh yeah, well so after, like, yeah.
Nu metal's so far back from even where her like oldies music is that I don't think she's going to be able to no. I just don't think these kids would ever be able to identify with it at all.
Yeah, no, we really had the lockdown on like white privilege anger. We made it work for us. So
well, also we also like there was no concern for like diversity or for any of that stuff. Totally. So like MTV could survive just playing nu metal videos all day, white guys screaming all day, you know, and like Paula Cole and shit. Like they could like get away with that, you know?
Totally. Well, that was exactly, they would start with Paula Cole asking the question, where have all the cowboys gone? And then they'd put All the Cowboys on right afterwards. Like, Kid Rock.
They play Cowboy by Kid Rock. Exactly. You know, I listened to Kid Rock
Cowboy
this week.
Cowboy baby. That's right. Well, this album this month is you know, it's a classic, I guess.
Certifiable baby.
Classic.
It is, if you say nu metal, you will. This is a band that depending on where you fall with nu metal, because this could also be considered butt rock.
Totally.
You
it's
know
right
what
on
I mean?
The line.
Like, totally.
Yeah.
But like this is a band that people will bring up when you bring up this period of music.
That's right. So we are reviewing Godsmack's self-titled debut album, Godsmack. It was released on August 25th, 1998, after being recorded in 1997 and 1998 in Boston, Massachusetts. The album was produced by Sully, which I find really interesting for a debut album on a major label. It was released on Universal Records. The album did extremely well. It peaked at number 22 on the Billboard 200. It has gone 4 times platinum in the United States, selling over 4 million copies. It's gone gold in Canada, selling 50,000 copies. And every single charted at 8 or higher on the Hot Rock Tracks chart, with Voodoo and Keep Away tying for the highest at 5th overall. And the funny thing about this, Brian, which I didn't know, is that they actually released this album 2 years prior. So this album was actually called All Wound Up and was their debut album. And then when they got signed to a major label, the major label was like, re-record the whole thing and release it. So this is they released the same album twice, which I find very interesting. And you certainly wouldn't see that anymore. That's the major label days of, well, no one really knows this outside of Boston, right? Okay, we'll just put out the same record that was already out. But yeah, so this is actually their second kick at the can. And yeah, you know, you talk about this band being brought up as being, you know, one of the nu metal sort of originators. Where were you at with Godsmack when this came out in 1998?
First, I wanted to talk about a little bit about them. I bet you the label just saw this really as like a low risk thing where they can just push out an album and if it sells, it sells.
Yeah.
If that makes sense, instead of like re-recording it and putting a bunch of money in it, releasing a $2,500 album and being like, you know, whatever happens, happens. I'm sure the label didn't help them.
No, probably not.
Like, didn't, I mean, they maybe sent him out on tour, but they probably didn't give him like a bus or anything like that. Or maybe they gave him a bus. I don't know what a small tour is, but they probably didn't like push it for radio play or any of that stuff. I would think that maybe the fact that they didn't re-record it shows that the label probably didn't believe in this.
No, they did re-record it.
Oh, I thought they said they didn't re-record it.
Yeah, okay, they re-recorded it, but they kept like they didn't do like they kept all the same songs. Even the differences are pretty minor. I'm going to send you the cover though, Brian. This is the cover of All Wound Up. It's in the I just put it in the chat.
It's All Wound Up. What a bad name for
it. Just look at that cover, man.
What is that? Is there popcorn on the ground? What is next to this thing? I don't even know what that is.
Yeah. For those of you, obviously, if you can't,
that is wild.
You can't see it, but look at, do yourself a favor and look this up, or we'll post it in the Podcast Discord. It is incredible. It's like, it almost looks like a glam rocker skeleton that's like sitting in a director's chair directly in front of an amp. And it's like tied up to a bunch of cords from the amp. And it looks like they've gotten blasted by the music. I don't know, but yeah, there's like,
I thought that was a TV.
I think it's an amp. I'm pretty sure.
No, I understand. It looks like a fucking 90s big screen though.
It could be either.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they have. So if you go to the Wikipedia for All Wound Up, it tells you the differences between this and Godsmack, but it's really like very, like it's very minor. Like it'll be like, Immune, the only difference is the guitar sound at the end doesn't fade out. Time Bomb, the intro is mixed significantly louder. Then there's like a bunch of ones with no differences at all. So they were re-recorded, but I think it was just like a case of re-recording it to make it sort of sound better, I guess. Or yeah, I don't know. Very strange. So
yeah. Yeah, it's a shitty cover. It's really bad. Oh, it's like covers. As bad as a cover could ever look.
Yes, yes.
But as far as my experience with them, I didn't like them back then because the voice reminded me of Creed. Like, I always had a trouble distinguishing bands that did the voice from just Creed,
yeah,
or Pearl Jam, you know, where it was kind of like, well, he's just doing a Pearl Jam voice. And at the time, I like Pearl Jam. And I really liked their first album, the one with Black on it. I love that song. I'm not going to say it. My daughter just said she was listening in the other room, so I didn't want to say this, but the first song in my life I ever had sex to when I was 16 years old was Black by Pearl Jam. So like that album just holds like a fucking thing in my head. That's like just a sense memory that makes me feel good now, you know?
Right.
But I liked that, but I didn't admit to my friends that I liked Pearl Jam at this time because like it was just like uncool, you know. I only liked metal. I only liked like Pantera and Korn and White Zombie and Deftones and shit like that. So like this band would have been so far out of my world. But I believe I saw them in at an Ozfest, I'm fairly certain.
Yeah.
But I also saw them co-headlining tour with the Deftones.
Yeah. Yeah, we've talked about that. I have the tour shirt.
Yeah, that's the show that I saw Chino really drunk.
Yes.
One of my favorite Deftones shows. But I left halfway through Godsmack because I just didn't have any interest in it. But you'll hear from my review, though, that I was wrong at that time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think for me, Godsmack was like one of those bands that I really only knew the singles from. And I think I pretty much only knew it because of wrestling. You know, like you texted me today that all of these songs could be wrestler entrance music. And that's like so true. Like, I just found that like, at the time, I the singles were like enough. Like I never needed more than I never heard a Godsmack song and was like, wow, that's so good. Give me more of that. Like but I never disliked them. I don't think I ever was like, I don't like Godsmack or I hate Godsmack. But I just think that I had this sort of thought in my mind that this was like, oh, the singles are good. And then if I heard something that wasn't a single, I'd be like, ah, it's like, it's fine. I don't need more of it in my life, you know? And it's funny that you brought up Creed, because in one of the interviews, Sully actually like shits on Creed, which is very funny to me for a band that is like one degree of separation away from being Creed to say ah, Creed fucking sucks, but my band rules is such a weird, it doesn't make any sense. Like it just doesn't, you know, it just doesn't make it. It'd be like Korn being like, yeah, Limp Bizkit is terrible. It's like, well then what are you doing? You know?
Actually, I would say this. There is a bit difference between Creed and Godsmack.
For sure.
That, like, Godsmack is very heavy. Now, let me clarify. Sully has nothing to do with the difference between Creed and Godsmack.
No, exactly.
Like, the part that Sully plays is the part that sounds like Creed.
Totally. Well, and what I thought was interesting here is, like, he definitely is sort of mimicking Creed, but I also get a lot of James Hetfield on this album. There's a lot of Sully just like trying to do the sort of growly half yell, half sing thing.
What was in the water in Massachusetts that spurred both Stained and Godsmack, which are both Alice in Chains ripoff. So if we're really being honest, yes, it's Alice in Chains that they're trying to do. And, you know, Layne Staley is actually like an interesting singer.
Yes.
And these guys are just doing like the worst version of Layne Staley really what's going on, or Eddie Vedder.
It's very funny. Like, so, you know, I think I've talked about, I saw Godsmack once, they opened for Metallica, and they did what I liked it. I thought it was a good show. And there was one part where Sully like got on the drums and they did this like dueling drums thing. And it was like very cool, I thought, and was really interesting. And, you know, if you read about Godsmack, like Sully was a drummer for like years and years and years. And then out of nowhere, just like became a singer. Like I think he had been drumming for like 20 years or something in various bands. And then for whatever reason with this band, they're like, okay, you're the singer. And it's kind of like, yeah, I get that. I get that he was like not a guy who expected to be the singer. And now it's just sort of like, like, it's just kind of easy to do that sort of vocal, I think. Like, I don't know. Yeah. And like I said, it just doesn't seem like he has his own style here. Like it's at times Eddie Vedder. It's at times Scott Stapp. It's at times James Hetfield. It's at times Layne Staley. There's not, you don't listen to this and you're like, well, this is so interesting and unique in my opinion, especially vocally.
No. But the reason these guys got signed, right, is Sully's look.
For sure.
You know?
Oh yeah.
That's what I also think, that's what made him famous really 100%. In the end, because he does talk about they toured like fucking crazy after this album came out, and the album sort of organically grew because of their touring. And it's like, that's just because people saw Sully and were like, this guy means business, you know?
Well, one thing I think is really funny, and we might get more into the lyrical content later, but anything you ever read about Sully is that he's like, you know, a huge dick. And I should read the tweet. It was really funny, but someone sent me a tweet today because I tweeted that we were doing Godsmack tonight. Yeah, this is Big Fat Ugly Baby on Twitter tweeted at me. My buddy used to run event stuff at a casino in Vegas, and Sully is the only celebrity he refused to comp because he was such a prick. You know, it's really funny because the theme of like 90% of these songs are just like, fuck you for being alive. Don't talk to me. Don't come near me. I'm not interested. Like, that's literally the theme of almost all of these songs. Most of the choruses are just like, get away from me. stay the fuck away from me. That's like every song is just a different variation of like, don't come near me or I'll kill you. And you're like, okay, yeah, it makes sense that you're a prick. You apparently hate everybody and you don't want anyone around you at any time.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there, wait. Oh, I never mind. I'm sorry. I was just looking through their albums and there's something called Smack This. And I was like, wait, did they name an album Smack This? But it was a video.
That would be great. I mean, even like one of the singles is called Keep Away. What, there's Get Up, Get Out. The chorus of whatever is literally Stay the Fuck Away From Me. So funny to me.
I guess if we wanted to get into like, my favorite part of the album is in the song Situation, when he like closes out the song just saying "Wation, Wation." Like he's not even saying the word anymore. He's cut sit off. He's just saying "Wation."
Yeah, I mean, he's
I was sitting in a car. And I was like, did this motherfucker just say "Wation"?
Yeah, it was his attempt at just, you know, connecting with the fans. And he's like, I'm just doing shorthand. Everything has a nickname. Like it's very much the sort of like Tom DeLonge school of singing, where it's like you any syllable can sound like anything if you just try hard enough.
Right. But you would say sitch instead of Wachin. Wachin is not the operative part of the word. Wachin.
I could imagine Sonny going into a party and being like, so what's the Wachin here, boys? And everyone being like, what? He's like, you know, the situation, yeah. The Wachin, what's going on?
That might be my new way of saying it. What's the Wachin? Hey, what's the Wachin here? And people would just be like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm like, you've never heard Godsmack, see?
Yeah.
Now I know.
Well, you know? And just being like, you know, talking about being an Alice in Chains clone. Obviously, there's a song by Alice in Chains called Godsmack that a lot of people say they're named after. And of course, they refute that they're named after the Alice in Chains song, which is so funny to me. Did you read the story about this, Brian?
Oh yeah. I snipped that part out of the story because it's so funny, because it's not even just that they didn't name the band after that.
No, the story is hilarious.
It's not that they didn't name the band after that. It is. That's where we picked the name up from. I was making fun of somebody who had a cold sore on his lip. And the next day I had one myself and somebody said, it's a Godsmack. The name stuck. Now, here's the part that I found to be very funny. We were aware of the Alice in Chains song, but didn't really think much about it. It's a cool song, and the name had meaning for us, which is a really fucking funny thing to me, to be like, we don't even like really listen to Alice in Chains at all. We just somehow made music that sounds almost exactly like Alice in Chains. But it's parallel thinking, really, is what that is.
Yeah, we just really what it was I was moving and my buddy decided to play a prank on me, and I went to open one of my moving boxes full of clothes, and my buddy jumped out of the box and we said, whoa, there's a man in the box. And so we named the band Man in the Box. And honestly, like, yeah, I've sort of heard about Alice in Chains, but it was really just this whole moving thing. You know, we always would just say, oh, that's the man in the box. Like, it just doesn't make, it's just so dumb. Like, I love I love that shit. Like, I love that band lore where it's like, you so obviously did a thing and you're like, no, it would be uncool. Like, maybe I get like 1998 was a different time and the whole like sellout thing was still a big thing and whatever. But I just feel like now people, it's like if you were like, yeah, we're the biggest Alice in Chains fans on earth. We love them so much. We love that song Godsmack. We named ourselves after that song. I feel like that is a good, you know, that's a good thing to do. Like, it just, people would be like, oh, cool. Okay. And so maybe it's just like part of that, like back in the 90s, you just couldn't be a big enough fan of something to name yourself after it. But it just, that part made me laugh so hard where it's like, you can't just name yourself, just say that you named yourself after Alice in Chains. It has to be this big, elaborate, stupid, made up story about cold sores, which is also very weird, gross,
uncool.
Yeah.
Uncool story.
Yeah.
It is also funny to think about, like his voice is so, like, who is his voice from then? Is that just his natural fucking speaking voice or singing voice? You know, where did he get the idea to sing like that? And I'll say this, back then it might have been tough because if this band was named, I don't know, something else like the Weichen, if they called themselves the Weichen, right? It still, when you wrote a piece about them in Rolling Stone, you would mention Alice in Chains. And the reason is because they sound kind of like Alice in Chains. So if you were to be like, okay, let's maybe throw people off that Alice in Chains scent, you would name it something that's not named after an Alice in Chains song.
Yes.
That would help tremendously.
Yeah, if you were called the Weichen and you were like, yeah, we sort of like Alice in Chains, but I wouldn't say they're like a big influence, it would be easier to buy than the fact that you have one of their songs as your band name.
Geez, I haven't really listened. I've barely heard them at all. You know, like Alice in Chains. What is their song? What's one of their songs? Rooster? Rooster? Roosty? I guess. I don't know. That's odd that you would say that.
Yeah, it is.
I never even thought about it.
Yeah, I've never. Creed? No idea. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not. Our band's called Higher, but it's not, that is not, I mean, that was just a different, it's just a different thing. You know, we don't know and we're not sure. They suck, actually. They're bad. We never really, that's the even kind of funnier part is like, they're sort of dismissive of Alice in Chains in a way where they're so obviously influenced by them as well, but they're kind of just like, yeah, like, you know, what, I mean, like they're fine, I guess, you know, and it's like,
this. I mean, that makes me happy. That's a cool thing to do, is because back then you had to respect your elders,
right?
Back then, and they were like, "Nah, we're not even gonna fucking do that shit," you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's fine, it's cool. I just, yeah, it was so interesting. Was there like, what was the sense? Because like I said, I wasn't really connected to the scene as well as you were back then. Like, what was the sense of Godsmack at the time? Because I know, you know, in 1998, there still probably would have been a lot of like new metal gatekeeping and stuff like that. Like, were they a band that were at least seen as like cool or perceived as cool, even if you didn't really like them necessarily?
I mean, not really in my world, because they wouldn't have got, I mean, I bet you if we had to guess when Godsmack would have been considered cool, it would have been when this album was originally self-released in Boston to people in Boston.
Right.
I think that was the only time they were considered cool. After that, it was kind of like, I can't be into these guys. You know, I'm not accepting applications from new metal bands right now.
Right.
Is really how I would feel about them at the time. But I don't know what year this, I wonder what, so probably didn't find out about them until 2000 at least.
Yeah, it felt maybe, like, even though this one sold 4 million, I feel like I didn't really hear about them until the Scorpion King, right? Because they wrote I Stand Alone for that, or the Mummy, I think it was the Scorpion King.
Well,
2000,
but I knew the I'm Doing the Best I Ever Did song.
Yes, me too.
Like, very, from when they first started playing it on radio.
Yeah,
on rock radio. So, like, I would have known this, but, like, yeah, they started to get, I mean, I feel like they got really big with the goddamn Navy commercials was when they became like a juggernaut, you know,
right,
and got grandfathered in as one of the bands that gets to be around and release albums forever. But nobody will ever want to hear the new songs. They'll just want to hear the songs from the Navy commercial.
Yeah. So I read a little bit about that. I know nothing about this, but I Sully basically said, like, yeah, the Navy asked if they could use our song and we thought that was cool, but we don't believe in war. That's what he said.
That's cool. That's a cool thing to do. But yeah, these guys seem, I mean, there's a lot of there's a lot about these guys. This album says a lot about them. The interviews we read said a lot about them. They are just fucking, they're high level rock star brain guys.
Yeah.
They really have rock star brain. And I think they probably had rock star brain before they even hit.
Well, Sully just looks like a guy who has looked like that forever. Like he was just training to be a rock star. Like in one of the articles, he says that he told himself he would give himself until he turned 30, that he was like going to try and make it in music until he turned 30. And then basically this album got big, like right when he turned 30, it was like the same year. This album dropped in June, I think, or sorry, this album dropped in August. And he said in one of the articles, like his birthday was in November or something. And so he was like, yeah, oh no, sorry. He's in February. So yeah. So it would have been that the yeah, I guess they had dropped the album in 97 and then he sort of felt like they were picking up some buzz. And so he was like, okay, cool. I can stay in this for a minute. And then they got really big, but that was his whole thing was like, I'll live this until I'm 30. And then like, whatever, I'll be an accountant or well, he's not smart enough to be an accountant probably, but you know, whatever.
He would have been fucking a laborer.
Yeah. Mechanic.
But maybe would have got a union job because a lot of people thought he was cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But yeah, it just seems like some guys have that look where you're like, oh, you've looked like this forever. This isn't a put on. This isn't like, oh, you got famous and you're like, shit, I better start dressing like a rock star. Sully felt like, you know, sometimes you'll just be out in public and you see someone dressed like they're in a band, but they're not, or like they're in a band, but they're in just like a really small band. And it's like, oh, you just dress like this all the time. Like Sully feels like that guy, like that you'd just be in like a Boston deli or something like that, and you'd look to your left and you'd be like, oh, is that guy in a band? I don't know, he looks kind of crazy, you know. And then luckily enough, yeah, he got into a famous band.
I mean, back then he really had the look. I think now he looks a little more square to me
for sure.
But he's also cleaning up and doing I think he's trying to do the country thing now.
Well, he's got more of the like he's got a bit of the like biker dad vibe now. Now that he's like 50, whatever, 53, he's got that sort of like, yeah, I own four motorcycles kind of vibe. Like he exclusively wears Harley Davidson shop t-shirts from all the different Harley Davidson dealerships he's been to.
He did go on tour with Aaron Lewis over the summer and speak out against, you know, masks and stuff like that, which is really the biggest problem we have out there is masks. So it's good.
I can only agree. You must hate Slipknot.
These guys are fighting a revolution. He was out there fighting a revolution. So that's why maybe I thought he was going in a country direction, because I see his solo album, which boy, would I love to review, called Hometown Life is what it's called.
The crazy part actually about this album is that Sully actually wrote all the songs. Like he has the only writing credit on most of these songs. Which is pretty crazy. Like you don't generally see that from these types of new metal bands and stuff like that, that he obviously was a drummer, but then that he also wrote all the guitar parts and stuff. The bass player actually has writing credits on a couple of the songs. And then the rest are just, the rest are Sully on his own, which must be interesting for the rest of the band members, depending on how they, split up the royalties on that. But yeah, Sully has the sole writing credit on six of the 12 songs. And then, Merrill has credit on three of them. So yeah, it's pretty wild.
Yeah. 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 I mean, he is the kind of good looking that like maybe doesn't appeal to the metal audience, like the hardcore, like people that are really into metal, but to like regular, like a roofer's wife would find him hot. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Oh my God, Sully. Have you seen Sully? Oh my God. You know?
Yeah. Sully on a hot tin roofer's wife, I think was a famous, play in the late 90s. But yeah,
I mean, I could just picture it. And he's just like one of those guys. He's like, in the same lane as like a Kid Rock or something.
Yeah,
like
for
that.
Sure.
Like, I think that's where he's ended up. I just don't think Godsmack is ever going to have another hit album again.
No, I mean, I wouldn't think so. Let's see what their last album did sales wise. Their last album came out in 2018. Do you want to guess what it's called, Brian?
I actually saw it, okay. I do forget what it was called, but tell us what it is.
When Legends Rise.
Yeah, that's a cool name for your album.
Yeah, these guys are legends 20 years on. I also like that the album before that was called 1000 Horsepower, leading me to that's just Sully riding a lot of motorcycles and being like, hell yeah. Okay, When Legends Rise is the seventh studio album by American rock band Godsmack. It was released in April 2018, and it marks the band's first album away from metal into a more hard rock sound. Which I don't quite understand that, because I feel like they've been there. Is, I mean, God, this is really funny. Let's see. Sales wise, it did very well. It peaked at number 8 on the Billboard 200 and peaked at number 1 on the alternative hard rock and rock albums charts. Peaked at 6 in Canada. And let's see if we've got some sales insights here. It doesn't look like I have exact sales numbers, but I mean, yeah, just incredible. This is also a very funny note. In 2020, the band released the official music video of Unforgettable that featured 400 middle school kids that were gathered by Sully to augment the band's performance of the song. Imagine being in a middle school choir and they're like, okay, we're going to back up Godsmack.
I mean, that probably kicks ass, though. I mean, because middle schoolers just think anybody that's famous is cool.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're like excited to meet a famous person.
Yeah, yeah. But it's still very funny to me. They also, When Legends Rise, the song is the song of the WWE pay-per-view events in Saudi Arabia. So that's about where that Godsmack is these days.
The WWE events that made people stop watching it forever because the politics.
Yeah, yeah. WWE was like, hey, Godsmack, do you want to be the WrestleMania theme song this year? And they're like, no, but we heard you're going to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Can we be on a crown jewel?
Yeah, we'd love that. We'd love that spot if we could get it. That would be great. Let's talk about some of the songs on the record. I mean, it sounds like you ended up liking this, like in general, because you said that
you
made the wrong decision back by not listening to it back in 1998. So.
I probably wouldn't have liked it back. To be honest, I wouldn't have liked it back then, no matter what. But it is kind of a joy to listen to now, because it's such dumb guy rock, man. It's perfect if you like really dumb, like guys saying really dumb guy shit. You know, like you said, most of the songs are like really just like Facebook meme songs where it's like, hey, you know, if you're going to talk shit about me behind my back, why don't you do it to my face and we can have like a, you know, whatever, a blow up or whatever they say on Facebook these days. I don't remember. And that's what it reminds me of. It's like a meme that would be shared on the page. I'm fed up of the lies and cheating. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like
you
a
ever
lot
seen
of
that page.
It's like, yeah, it's kind of, it's got that like DeShare zone sort of like just a picture of like a skeleton mowing the lawn and then being like, stay the fuck away from me. It's like a lot of that kind of, that sort of memery.
I mean, also a good thing about Godsmack that is not true of very many new metal bands. I'm actually racking my brain to try to think of another one. Orgy, but it's very sexy. He's like, he sings about sexy shit too, which is funny when you do that in metal, because it's kind of like, I mean, who gets turned on by heavy metal? Like, what couple is like fucking, hey, you know, let's start having a romantic evening and fucking throws Moon Baby on?
I just love that the song that Godsmack debuted themselves to the world with is called Moon Baby.
And it's a sex song. Let's take a blast to the moon, baby. I sit around wishing you well. How I'm craving you. Yeah. Every time I'm near you, I always want to swallow you down. Like, oh, God, man. It makes me look at Solly like differently. Like, oh, God, dude.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to know what you did on that tour bus.
Even that is kind of like dumb guy songwriting, right? Like, let's go to the moon. Like, it's not, there's no subtlety to any of this. It's like every lyric, and like, I guess maybe that's sort of commendable, but there's no, Sully has no time for metaphor. There's no, there's no sort of, I wonder what this song is about with Sully. It's like, it's either about fucking, fighting, or property rights. It seems like
those. John, let me say this, and think of it what you will. If I had gotten into this band in like 2001, 2002, I would have had sex to Moon Baby for sure. And I'd be like, Katie, you know,
you're my Moon Baby. Let's go.
Have you heard this song? You know, you're, hey, you know, let's turn Drive Off by Incubus tonight and do Moon Baby.
I'm in a
tonight.
Moon Baby mood. I'm not in a I'm not in a drive mood. Well, it is funny to me too, like, for the problem for me, I guess, or not problem, but the girl on the cover of the record, I mean, this album art is incredible. I mean, it's really, it's got Godsmack in Sully's own navel sun tattoo. For those of you who don't know, Sully has a tribal sun tattooed around his belly button, and then just this girl with like ultra thin drawn on eyebrows, three different lip piercings, a septum piercing, red, like short red hair, she's naked, I guess. It just is so, it's such a funny and good cover for like what, and but what I was going to say is that I just picture her as the moon baby. And then it was like hard to like get that image out of my mind of like Sully just, you know, looking at the cover and singing to this girl on the cover. And I didn't enjoy it.
Sure. She's my 2000 dream girl. Like, oh my God, if I could just find a girl like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With all the piercings.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. With all the piercings and shit. You know, I was very into like that Suicide Girls look. Mm-hmm. But like I wanted a more white trash version of that.
You know? Don't and think that this girl album is cover. Okay, I was gonna say I thought for a second you were saying like this wasn't the white trash version of that, and I was like,
No, that's exactly what this is. It's beautiful though.
Yeah.
It is just like it would be my dream girl when I was a teen. Like that's who I'm gonna end up with, right? Is a girl that looks like that. And I assume she is picked for the cover so that the husband can look at her and say she's hot, and the wife can look at her and say I'm kind of like her,
right?
You know.
Yeah, yeah, there's something for everyone.
If I wasn't a nurse, I would get my lip pierced three times and my septum pierced.
Yeah, you know? Of course, that's the only reason I haven't. And I've been saying this,
taking shots at our healthcare heroes. Actually, I will say this. Most nurses are good. They just, as an occupation in the United States, have a very crazy number of anti-vax people that work in an,
oh, really?
An office.
Oh, my God.
In a hospital. Yeah. It's like 21%.
Oh, my God.
Of them. It's crazy.
yeah. Well, I mean, I don't even know what to say to that. I think this is like, I just found, so I, the weird thing about this album to me is like, I don't even think it's bad, but it's very unpleasant. Like it's not like you said, it's hard to imagine people having sex to this. And like, it's hard to imagine for me, like anyone doing anything to this. Like, it's just, I don't even know that I would say it's bad. It just is like, it seems like unpleasant music for unhappy people. To me, like, it just is, you know what I like,
it is,
does that mean like this whole album, it's 55 minutes long, and it feels like that, like it just, there's no differentiation between a lot of the songs. Like the song titles could flip over and I felt like I was still on the same song. Like they're just, I don't know, it just, there was nothing here where I was like, ooh, this is really interesting, aside from Voodoo, which I assume we're going to talk about for like 20 minutes whenever we get
love
there.
That song. You know, I just found a new thing that maybe we could do on other shows if it was funny. But like the Amazon product description for this album is really fucking good.
Yeah.
In a post-Seattle sound rock world, there's still a hunger for music that's dark, dirge-like, and heavy.
Oh my God.
And the void left by Soundgarden and company is being filled by a spate of bands, including Boston's Godsmack, who even nicknamed their song from Alice in Chains song. Like Creed in Days of the New, Godsmack are raging and disenfranchised. As singer Sully Erna's lyrics illustrate, "I'm in a living hell, makes me wonder if I'm alive," or "You're pathetic in your own way, I don't like you anyway." Though the territory being mined isn't new, Godsmack's grungy grooves, potent energy, and strong hooks are irresistible, with a dash of Tool and a smattering of Filter seeping through. Godsmack are on the money, especially on "Whatever," the tantalizing "Get Up, Get Out," and the strided and syncopated "Bad Religion," on which Erna puts one in the mind of James Hetfield. While Godsmack's approach may not be fresh, the foursome strong songs and powerful energy are still intensely tasty, especially for those with a taste for songs on the sober but never stained side.
This is too horny. I didn't like that. Was way too horny. Tantalizing, tasty.
Tasty's great. That's Catherine Tubman. But that is like, if you were to be like, "Hey, I need to get a, I need to read the description of what Godsmack is before I purchase this CD on Amazon," that would tell you what this album is.
No, I just mean, it was like a good description
in a positive version of what you just said. It's like taking all of the things that you found to be negative about this album and framing them as a positive, yeah. Which I kind of like.
No, that's a good counterpoint. And that's what I mean. Like, I don't even think it's bad necessarily. Like, I think it's competent. I think the drumming is actually quite good and interesting, which like a lot of the best new metal bands were that because they had a really good rhythm section. And like I said before, I just think Godsmack is still a band where, like, if you put on one song by them, I'm like, "Oh, that's pretty good." But like to sit down and listen to 12 of them was like I was listening to it on the way to work this morning. And it's like, so it's like 7:30 in the morning and I'm driving to work and I'm listening to this and I'm like, is this someone's life? Like, does someone put this on at 7:30 in the morning while they're driving to work? And they're like, "Yeah, this is getting me geared up for the day." Like, it made me sad. Like, I just couldn't. But yeah, like I said, it's done well. I get why people like it. It's not that I hated it. It was just too much. It's too much.
This is like 75% of the guys that I went to high school with. Like, if you went and looked at their Facebook page, it would basically just be this Godsmack album.
Right.
Which there were some lyrics that I did want to bring up.
Please.
From this album. And this is from, like, obviously I like Keep Away and Whatever. Those songs fucking bang. You know, I'm not going to shit talk those songs. I like when he says, "I'm doing the best I ever did."
Oh yeah. You Whatever is a good song for sure. Whatever is a really strong song. That's one of the only ones I remember. Like, it was weird. I definitely remembered Voodoo, obviously, because you can't forget that song. But then I was like, I don't think I know any of the other songs on this album. And then when I was listening through it and I heard Whatever, I was like, oh, I definitely had this song on a mixed CD when I was this age. And yeah, it was like, "Stay the fuck away from me." Like, I love the whole, all, and there's the, it's a good, yeah, it's got a good, you know, it's fine. It's got a good thing going.
I actually thought that Whatever was the only song I knew from this album, but I knew Keep Away and might even like that more than Whatever.
Yeah, Keep Away, I sort of remember
really,
too.
Really? I really like when he says, "Never misunderstand me." That's tight. That is like a way to say that.
Never misunderstand,
me.
Yeah.
Keep away from me.
Those are all the singles. So Whatever was the first single, Keep Away was the second, Voodoo the third, and then Bad Religion the fourth.
Which Bad Religion is a song I wanted to hit some lyrics of.
Okay, please. I thought it's probably the worst song on the album for me, actually, Bad Religion.
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah, I don't love it.
It is not a good song at all, but the lyrics are really bad. Like, yeah, this is high level bad. This is like dropping plates bad.
Oh, you know? I love that.
Can you feel I'm not like you anymore? I can't see. I can't breathe. Now, here's where it gets weird. See you quiver like the dogs on the street. Looking down on as I beat you. It's a bad religion from a broken nation. It's a contradiction and I can't take it anymore. Isn't that like a really, like, that is a fucking crazy thing to say, especially if you're like, I like to commune with nature, to say, see you quiver like the dogs on the street looking down as I beat you. It's like a really, that's a brutal lyric, I gotta tell you.
It is.
Not used to animal violence from a band. I am used to like bands saying like, oh, you know, I'll fuck you up, I'll kick your ass, and like, you know, you're totally fine with that, because to tell you the truth, dudes usually deserve to have their ass kicked, so I'm totally fine with that. But a quivering dog, and then you see, like, so if you get in the mind of this guy, he sees a quivering dog, he beats the shit out of it instead of like nursing it back to health.
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't even pick up on that lyric, because Sully could be talking about beating up anything. I mean, to me, that's just, this whole album is just about, it's just about beating stuff up. So I don't even think I recognized like, oh, who is he beating up here? I'm just like, yeah, Sully's beating some guys up in this song. He's beating them up, or he's threatening to beat them up. That's his whole, if you don't get away from me, I'm going to kick your ass, or I'm going to kick your ass. Those are really the two main, or I'm going to fuck your ass. Those are the three, Godsmacks, the three Godsmack genders.
I mean, that's something I'm a huge fan of, though, is that, again, these guys fuck, which is like really not a nu metal thing. You know, Jonathan Davis had a little bit of sex, and Deftones had like a little bit of sex. I guess all of them had some sex, but like this has like sensual sex, you know, like you wouldn't call a Korn song or a Limp Bizkit song erotic. You might call a Deftones song erotic. Oh,
definitely. But like, White Pony's very erotic.
When Godsmack decides they want to be erotic, they're like actually pretty erotic.
I just, you know, think, like,
just listening to it, like, I could beat off to this.
What I would yeah, you could you?
Probably. I mean, I could try. You want me to report back to you on the next singles
please,
podcast?
Please. What I would say is, like, I think Limp Bizkit was the only nu metal band probably that were writing songs specifically to get laid. You know, like, I think like Korn and Deftones and other nu metal bands, like, they had sexy songs, but I don't think they were expressly writing music to be like, I want to get laid. Whereas this feels like Sully was like, yeah, we're a heavy band, but also I want to have sex because of this.
Absolutely. Abso-fucking-lutely, John. Like, he is not a deep guy. He's not like, I mean, he fucking got the sun tattooed around his belly button and then made that the band's logo. Like, he is the least deep guy we've covered. Like, yeah. I feel like I fucking know him as a person.
Oh, yeah.
After listening to this album.
Yeah.
Like, I could sit down and have a conversation with him. He would probably whip my ass for doing this podcast, though. Even though we're being kind of nice to him, you've been kind of mean to him. So now he's going to want to whip our asses.
Yeah.
I'm never going to be able to be around Sully.
Well, I'm just following his advice, and I'm going to stay the fuck away from him. That's really my whole thing. That's what he wants, and that's what I will do. So Yeah, I don't know. It's very funny to me that he, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Like my friend, Ryan Lambert, he's a hockey writer and podcaster, very funny guy. He lives in Boston, and he said that, there's this like deli that he goes to a lot, and there's like a giant picture of Sully on the wall. And it's just like Sully, I guess, like legitimately still goes to this deli like all the time. And he's like, yeah, I saw like, there's just a big picture in there, and it's like Sully signed it. Like, you know, thanks for all the sandwiches or whatever. He like sent it to me because he was like, yeah, I'm in my favorite sandwich shop, and I just, this picture reminded me of you. I'm like, thanks.
Yeah,
I'm glad Sully Erna reminds you of me.
I mean, it is like a really, that is like such a Boston guy thing. Now I want to go to that sandwich shop.
Yeah, we can make,
because
it happen.
Like I respect the shit out of like going to the Godsmack sandwich shop. And I'm sure like every place, or, you know, one out of every five places there has an autographed Sully picture in it, you know. Yeah. I've been to Boston. It is a very Godsmack town, I gotta tell you. Like,
I know, like, they swept the Boston Music Awards, Brian.
I yes, absolutely. I mean, I don't know who the other, there's like, there is Stained, but they abandoned Boston, you know. Stained ended up going to LA and all this stuff.
Well, yeah, Aaron Lewis lives in Vermont now. And I think he's from Vermont, yeah, originally.
Where does Sully live?
He lives in Boston still, I think. I think he stayed, yeah.
That is fucking, God, this guy, see, I kind of like him more now because of that. Yeah, he lives in Lawrence, Massachusetts.
There you go.
So
yeah, I'm looking up the Boston Music Awards 2000. And okay, this is just the kind of like tagline on the website. Hard Rockers Godsmack completed a fantasy year by copping four Boston Music Awards, including Act of the Year, at last night's Kahlua Boston Music Awards at the Orpheum Theater. Trailing close behind were blues sensation Susan Tedeschi and club favorites The Sheila Divine with three awards apiece. And so the Act of the Year was Godsmack. The rising star, Power Man 5000. The band that narrowly lost to Godsmack in the poll this month.
Really?
Yeah, it doesn't have, oh my God. Debut album of the year, LFO's LFO.
Oh, no Stained?
No, that was not the debut. The female vocalist of the year was Donna Summer. And the male vocalist of the year was Sully Erna.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Those are the two Bostons, the two sides of Boston. Donna Summer and Sully Erna. That's so funny. Holy smokes, that's hilarious. It doesn't show if there were like nominees. It just shows who won. It doesn't say anything about nominees. So I don't know who Godsmack had to beat out for Act of the Year, but it was a tight race, you know?
No Dropkick Murphys at all there.
Nothing there. No, it's like a lot of bands. Hardcore metal band Tree. Ska band Kicked in the Head. So maybe Dropkick Murphys weren't there yet.
Yeah. I've heard of them, I believe. I don't think I've heard of Tree, but the Dropkick Murphys is the only band that would even have like a chance against Godsmack or Stained. But again, Aaron Lewis is a traitor. He also talks shit about the city, not Boston specifically, but like he hates the city. He probably hates the people in Boston because they're like more liberal than conservative and shit like that. So that's probably why they don't respect him. It would be nice though if I could have gone to that show with Aaron Lewis and Sully Erna.
That would have been great, yeah.
The speaking tour. It was a speaking tour, dude.
Oh my God.
Like they were going and speaking. Like, can you Sully has a podcast and I was going to listen to it today if I could, but I didn't catch up to it.
Oh my
God. So he does like politics and shit like that too. He does like politics. Let me get it.
I'm looking it up right now. He
does a podcast. Maybe
it's called the Hometown Sessions. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe he plays music on it. Maybe that's a little better, but maybe no. He has guests.
Oh, it's a YouTube web series called Hometown Sessions.
Yeah, because I've seen clips from it, and he's a Trump guy, and
of course,
you know, he does. Okay, yeah, he does shorts. And
yeah, he says every Tuesday I will be bringing on celebrity guests, musician friends, and talking all things music. You never know. You may even catch some unique live performances from time to time. Thursdays will be reserved for real talk about real life as we invite some of the top experts in to talk about mental health, struggles with addiction, depression, bullying, and so much more.
Okay. So real talk.
Real talk.
Oh, wow. He had Robert Kelly, the comedian, on there. Oh,
okay.
He had Jacoby Shaddix.
Of course.
Jim Wahlberg, which has to be related to the famous Wahlberg family.
We'd assume so,
House Wahlberg, as they called it. So, yeah. I mean, I guess the only other song that really stood out to me, though, was Voodoo.
Of course. I mean, Voodoo is unbelievable. I just
think it's the greatest. It is such a great fucking song. It'll always be around, and it is a good dumb guy song.
It's a really good song. I mean, if you are a male witch, it makes perfect sense to do this song, to do a song called Voodoo, to talk about snakes biting you. I also just think, like, it's really interesting that it's the last song on the album. I almost wonder if it was never planned on being a single and then the fans just wanted it so bad because it was the third single. So it makes me feel like maybe that's kind of what happened, that like radio stations maybe just started playing it and then it became the third single, because it's so different from the rest of the album. And it's so interesting that it's the last song. But it's, yeah, when you get through all this other kind of like dirgy, you know, metal breakdown shit, you know, it is just an incredible, it's a really, really good song. And it's just so interesting. It's just such an interesting song. There aren't other bands in this genre, in this vein, that are doing songs like that. You know, the drumming is really interesting, just using all the alternate percussion, and sounds kind of like they're using some congas and other stuff in there. It just, yeah, it's a good, it's an interesting song. And then of course it's got the classic voodoo, like just saying that over and over again. It's truly wild.
I actually saw them live in I'm remembering that I did see them live in an arena, and they did do Voodoo, where they all like had a drum.
Yeah,
because
that's what they did with Metallica. They Sully and the drummer did like a dueling drum solo thing as part of Voodoo.
Man, that's so cool.
Yeah, it's a cool song, man. And it just, like, yeah, like I said, I think Sully is a guy, even if you don't know that he's like into Wicca and being a witch and all that stuff, just the, like, you can just see a picture of him and you can be like, yeah, this is a guy who probably has let a snake bite him for fun. And I feel the snake bite into my veins. Never did I want to be here
Is this song about voodoo, or is this song about heroin?
Oh, it's definitely like, about heroin. It's definitely about heroin. I mean, there's no question about that. But it's also about...
Did he say it?
Oh, I don't know. To me, that seems like that's obviously what it's about, but I could be wrong.
I'm trying to find the Genius page. Oh. I got it. I got the Genius page. I just got to get down to Voodoo, which has 31.2K views, but none of the other songs had any. So people just search for Voodoo when they're coming for Godsmack.
Right.
It sounds like this is based on a movie more than anything.
Okay.
It was inspired by the movie The Serpent and the Rainbow.
Sure.
Which is a movie about dark magic made by Wes Craven, like in the 90s.
Great.
So maybe that's what it is. It doesn't say anything about heroin.
Okay, here. So maybe it is just literally about practicing witchcraft, which makes sense. Sully likes to talk about it.
And the issue with that is that, like, even if they said it wasn't about heroin, he's such a fucking liar about that kind of thing. Like, he's the type of guy that you'd be like, hey, man, I think this song's about heroin. And he'll be like, no, this is actually about putting spells on people.
Yeah.
Really? That's what the song's about.
It's just about spells, you know? Maybe that's it.
God, I love this guy. I'm going to get real deep on Sully now. And just so I can see, like really learn about him. I'm going to listen to his podcast. It's going to be great.
Yeah. He's a true guy. I mean, we can talk about some of the articles. Some of the Rolling Stone stuff, as always, is just so reliable. So great. I love it. This one, there's two Q&As. I've got one here from the year 2000 and one from 1999. No, 2003. Sorry. So the 2000 one is very funny. It just says Q&A Sully Erna of Godsmack. The sub quote is, I never really wanted to be the poster child for witchcraft, but that's fine. And then it gets into the
some
article.
Good stuff in here.
Oh, man.
There is just some legendary shit in
here. I'll go first and then you can go. This one is really funny to me because there's just no way that any of this is true. And especially given what we know about Sully now, you got to feel good about your album going platinum. We don't really hear much about that stuff. Already, that is the dumbest quote. I mean, are you fucking joking me? You're on Universal Records. You don't know how many records you're selling. I mean, let's get serious. We don't really hear much about that stuff. We ask to be cut out of that kind of information because we don't want to lose our creativity and the drive. No one wants to get on the rock star ego trip. I mean, that is just all, he's just lying. That's just all lies.
It's a great lie.
It's a great lie, right? Like, we want to be cut out. We ask the label, don't tell us how well our album is selling. We don't even want to know, because if we know, we won't try anymore. I mean, that is just an, it's unbelievable. Like, as though there are bands who, you know, the label rushes in, they're like, holy shit, guys, you went platinum. And they're like, fuck, now we don't know how to write another song now. We've gone platinum.
We're fucked. Oh my
our
god.
Our drive is all we've our creativity's gone.
Platinum. I'm just going to go back home and watch fucking TV until I think of some more songs. That is, I had that one cut out too. That really made me laugh. That, like, they would be able to ignore it. Like, they're like, there is a blackout on talking about album sales to Sully from Godsmack.
Yeah.
So don't look him in the eye. Don't talk about sales, even no matter how much he sells. I just don't want to hear about it. I don't have a rock star ego. I'll never have one. It's like, guy, you have four fucking Harleys.
I love the, like, I'm loving the idea of, like, an intern at Universal Records, like, picks up the phone. It's like dialing. It's like mid ring. And then, like, their boss comes in and, like, hangs up the, what are you doing? The newest Godsmack sales figures came in. I thought I'd call Sully. No! You fucking imbecile. You're fine. Get out of here. You know you're never to call Sully with the album figures.
Yeah, even if it, because if it went 11 times platinum, I would want it to go 12 times platinum. It's really the reason he wouldn't want to know that. It's because there's not a number he would be satisfied with.
So good.
God, that's really funny. I have one where he said, they said, you have a song on the Any Given Sunday soundtrack.
I love this one.
He was like, yeah, I was pretty excited about that because Al Pacino's my favorite.
Of course.
When they told me that I might be able to meet him, I was like, sick. I just love that guy so much. I'm hoping he has some hot daughter who loves Godsmack and will drag him to a show. You don't have to print that one. Rolling Stone did him dirty there.
That is unbelievable, right? Like, they told me I might be able to meet him. But then after I didn't get to meet him, I was hoping his hot daughter would bring him to a show. And that would be the way that I would meet him. Al Pacino, you're my favorite. And I would also like to fuck your hot daughter.
Yeah. They told him that he could go to the premiere of the movie and Al Pacino would be at the premiere of the movie, but he would be sitting way in the back away from Al Pacino, like basically intentionally keeping him away from Al Pacino.
Yeah.
Also, like, what's he meet Al Pacino and then like get in a fight with one of the security guards or something like that? Like, this guy doesn't seem like the kind of guy that meets people that are on a higher level than him, you know?
Oh yeah. 100%. And then obviously he gets into the witchcraft. It's very funny. He says, it's a religion. A lot of people just affiliate the word witch with evil because Christianity condemned it so many hundreds of years ago. Back in those days, witches were just women who believed in herbs and plants as natural healing remedies, the belief in the earth and karma and stuff like that. Because it's so blown up to be this super hocus pocus kind of magical thing, people are almost disappointed when they find out what witchcraft really is, because it's very much like any other religion. You do it for yourself. Maybe Buddhism works for you. Maybe Christianity works for you. Whatever it is, if it works, it works, and I don't question it. What's wrong with Christianity? Well, my problem with Christianity was they never allowed you to look into any other religions. It's like, this is the book, this is the way, believe it or go to hell. Fuck that. And who knows, I could be wrong. Maybe when I die, I could go to purgatory and there could be Jesus going, see, we tried to tell you the whole time, you fucked up, now go to hell. That's some heavy shit right there. Yeah, it is.
I love the interviewer in this, because I won't read the whole thing, but one of the questions he asked is, I hear you're into this whole witchcraft wackiness.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more? And then Sully talks about how, like, I'll shut you down if I think you're making fun of me for being into witchcraft. And then he's like, no, really, I'm being sincere. It's like, motherfucker, you called it wackiness. You were not being sincere until Sully intimidated you by calling it, by saying, like, I will shut it down right now.
Right,
I will
fucking
make
now.
You go away. Yeah, I'll make
sure
you go
away from here. Yeah. And then, so yeah, the interviewer says, that's some heavy shit right there. And then he talks about being a witch or whatever, and a lot of people want to hide it. And then he says, but ultimately a lot of kids write to me about it and they're very curious, but I think a lot of them find out that it really is a religion and you have to do work. And then they go, ah, I just wanted to cast spells.
I wonder what kind of work you have to do.
I don't know. Like, but Brian, if you were just sitting there thinking as a 43-year-old man or 42-year-old man that you were just going to cast some spells, you're in the wrong place, brother. I'll tell you that right now.
It's fucking horseshit. That is, I mean, it's the same thing that happened to me with Satanism. It's like when I found out it was just like a libertarian thing, I was like, oh, this is a lot less attractive to me. You know, I can't harness the dark lord without thinking about free markets and shit like that. So he really hurt Wiccan for me, because it's like, I just want to fucking do spells, dude.
I just want to do some spells, man. Yeah, very funny. Bro. And then the next interview, also with Rolling Stone, this is the one from 2003, super funny. This line, well, there's a cup, this whole last part is so funny. You have a baby, what music do you play her? She listens to Godsmack. And then the interviewer says, really? Oh yeah, she loves it. When Jen was pregnant, the whole time she would put the headphones on her belly and play voodoo over and over again.
It's a good one though. It's a lot of drums.
Yeah, a lot of just kind of moving with the baby. And then yeah, and then he has this great last quotes, which are just, I mean, this is such, all of it is such dumb guy Boston shit. It makes me laugh so hard. What do you think are the most overhyped bands in America? Creed laughs. Then he says, and there was a scare for a minute when it looked like the White Stripes, the Hives, and the Vines were all going to come through. Some people hate opera or country. For me, it's that shit. That White Stripes song sings Fell in Love with a Girl. Oh my God, I want to throw myself in front of a bus. Bad news for him after Jack White got very popular. What music would people be surprised to know that you like? I love certain hip hop acts like Nelly, and I have a lot of respect for Eminem. Alicia Keys, she's fucking amazing. I love Christina Aguilera. I really do. I don't want to poke the girl, ahem, Fred Durst. Or anything, but her talent is amazing. She's like a little Whitney Houston, you know? Interviewer.
Wow.
So why does her image have to be so skanky?
I know.
And then Sully says, you say that weird. Like it's a bad thing. End of interview. That's the last thing in this Q&A. Why does she have to be so skanky?
That was crazy. That was wild. Yeah, that's something you don't see.
No.
I did like the baby stuff.
Yeah.
And the bands. I cut all the same stuff except for what's the best music to have on before, during, and after sex.
I figured I'd leave that one for you.
It's not. I wish it was the same answer as what music does your baby listen to, which would be Godsmack.
Yeah.
I wish he had sex to Godsmack. What's the best music to have on before, during, and after sex? Okay, to warm up, I'll go with Dead Can Dance's Into the Labyrinth. It's the kind of stuff that makes you want to sip wine and burn incense and start feeling bodies. You know, rubbing and grinding, that kind of thing. During, I'd have to go with Jane's Addiction's Nothing Shocking. By the way, he switches songs during. He's like curating the playlist.
Yeah, of course. Baby, now that I've gone down on you, I'm going to, and this is like 2000. He's like, I'm going to change the CD changer. get this going on.
And then it's just aggressive enough where you can get freaky, but it's not like Pantera where you're just a jackhammer. Afterwards, this is so Sully too. This is such perfect Boston guy shit. Afterwards, I think I would have to go with Frank Sinatra with the old robe and pipe in the mouth.
The old robe and
pipe.
Whoa.
Yeah. Get that old robe and pipe in my mouth and listen to My Way. Cause that is definitely, he knows like two Sinatra songs, and it's My Way and New York, New York. The same two that I know.
Yes. 100%. But that's what you put on after. You just, you know, you bed the woman and then you come out in a robe and pipe, like job well done, sport.
It's funny because like, he was probably so excited to answer this, like the guy, I even wonder if the guy even asked this, to tell you the truth. Because, you know, sometimes you give an interview and they change the questions to be more brief after your answers, or they just put the questions in to match what you've talked about. You know, yeah. I'll bet you I would guess that Sully volunteered this information without being asked.
I think you're right. I think that's a really good call. Yeah. It is it is truly, he's a guy, you know, and that's all we can say. He's a true guy. Brian, we're here at the end of the review. We've got what we do, if this is your first time ever listening to the show, is to give the album a score. We give it a tweet defense score, which is that if someone tweeted at us, hey, that Godsmack album sucks, how many tweets would we defend it with? Brian, I'll let you go first.
I would defend this album with five tweets, five of them.
Okay.
Cause I don't really like it very much. And I have the same basic criticisms that you have, John. It is boring and kind of generic sounding, and like, you know, you can see why it sold a fuckload of albums. You know, you can see why they sold as many albums as they sold, because it is really just really middle of the road kind of generic crap. It's just slightly heavier than Creed, so they get to have a little bit of respect.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm going to go a little lower than you. I'd probably go three, I would say. I think sort of everything you just said. I don't think that it's, like I said, it's one of those bands. I like little songs here and there. I don't necessarily care about anything else. Godsmack is one of those bands, like if you took their sort of six or seven best songs, like they're all pretty good songs. To sit down and listen to a whole album, especially their first album when they hadn't really figured out how to be a bit of a pop band or whatever. I think, yeah, this one's a three for me. And that's kind of where I'm at. So,
well, you know, John, you don't like bummer albums. You know, this is a criticism you've had a few times of things. I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre soundtrack, I think, was one where you kind of had the same critique where you're just like, it's just a fucking bummer, man. All these songs are nothing about it is like it's music sapped of all joy. There's no good feelings in it.
Yeah. There's no joy. Good
feelings.
Well, I think part of it is that, like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I love Korn. Like, it's funny. Like, I was thinking about this because, yeah, one of my main criticisms of this album is that it kind of all sounds the same and it's a little bit sort of depressing or whatever. But then, like, there's probably people who feel that way about like the first Korn record, for example, which, like, I love that record. But if someone was like, oh, this kind of all sounds the same, I guess I could understand that. I mean, I don't find that because I think Korn has more of a range, but certainly most of the Korn songs are pretty sad and aggressive and intense. I guess it's just like, there's no sort of melody here. And I think that's really what makes it depressing to me. It's not even depressing. It's just, like I said, it's unpleasant. Like, putting this on doesn't make me feel any way. Like, I don't need to live in the feelings that are on this album, I guess. And yeah, I don't know. It just, to me, it's like, it's just a flat line. It's like, we're here and we're doing the thing and there's not a lot of, that's why Voodoo is so interesting to me. Cause it's like, that's them actually doing something different. But so much of the record just kind of sounds the same and it's all just sort of in the same beige tone where I'm like, I don't know. This is fine.
It really reminded me of the mini series I did on the Street Fight Patreon, the butt rock one.
Yeah.
It reminded me of a lot of the music I had to listen to for that, where, like, you put on the album, none of the songs are super distinguishable from each other. They all have roughly the same themes and same sounds. And they're really just designed to get those two or three singles to hit and then tour on, you know, those two or three singles. And that's where you make the money. I would love to hear from listeners about whether or not they actually, like, enjoy this whole album, or if they really just think about the three songs and are like, you know, these are fun. Because, again, as like you said, if this whole album was those three songs, this would be the most bangingest album of all time. If they were like Minor Threat or something.
Well, yeah. Like,
where they made like 15 minute album.
Well, or even just, like I said, like a a greatest hits collection. I could totally see putting on a Godsmack greatest hits collection and enjoying it more the whole way through. But yeah, I think you're right. I think people go, Godsmack is a good band. And it's like, okay, do you actually, like, listen to their records, or do you just know the, like, five Godsmack songs that everyone else knows and you're like, okay, this is pretty good. So yeah, I think that's totally a fair criticism. So I'm with you on that.
I also think their greatest hit should be called You Want the Smack. Just like, that's a little thing I'm throwing in there for them in case they listen.
I think they do have a greatest hits album. Let me look up what it's called, because I remember. I think it has kind of a stupid name, if I remember right.
It's called Led Zepp song.
Yes, it is. It's called Good Times, Bad Times, The Essentials. And it leads off with a cover of Good Times, Bad Times.
Yeah, could these guys, like, name anything? Do you think, like,
no, they
do
can't.
You think they have the ability to name something that's not already used?
No, they can't. Good Times, Bad Times, 10 Years of Godsmack, and the cover is Sully riding a motorcycle. So that tells you everything.
This band
you need to
is
know.
Just him. God, I'm gonna say this right now. Godsmack is Sully Erna, just like Nine Inch Nails is Trent Reznor. Like, Trent Reznor is really the only person in Nine Inch Nails, and Sully Erna is, like, really the only person in Godsmack. This is his band. His goddamn belly button tattoo is the logo.
Yeah.
Again.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Here's the
wild. That's a wild tattoo, man. That is just,
this is the Good Times, Bad Times cover. I'll give everyone a little preview of it.
In the days of my youth, I was
Oh, imagine that. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Oh, imagine it's like literally just a straightforward cover where the drummer doesn't even nail the opening fill. And then it's just Sully.
He doesn't try at all to do it.
You know, I've had my share. When a woman gets called, well, I'm here, but I don't hear okay, well.
They also probably took all the swing out of the song.
100%.
Too.
There's no swing in it. There's no swing.
It just is like starts and stops and shit.
It does. Yes. It
fucking stinks. These guys stink.
There is some swing over at our Patreon, though, if you want to check out patreon.com/thePODcast. That's cast with a K, like the band Korn. We release 3 bonus episodes every single month. We do a full-length compilation album. Last month, we just did the Spawn original soundtrack with Chris Wade from Chapo Trap House and Introducing. It was super fun. It's up there now. This month, we are going to be doing a live show, another live stream, because we're going to be watching the Alone I Break documentary, the making of Korn's video for Alone I Break. Basically, the story is that MTV ran a contest where directors could submit to direct this video. And apparently the guy who won is like this 24-year-old insane person. And it's like one of the funniest things ever. Brian and I have both never seen it, but we're going to be doing it live on 420 on April 20th. It'll be 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
I do want to say something here, John.
Okay.
I am getting my second shot on April 19th.
Okay.
So you might be able to see me look really like shit.
There you go.
On this show.
There you go. Perfect. So there you go. April 20th. Sell. That's a big sell. Brian might look like shit. We'll probably be bringing a guest on as well. But yeah, you'll have to be a Patreon donor in order to get access to that show. So you can head on over to patreon.com/thePODcast and do that. There's all information there too about you can choose what singles and what albums Brian and I review for the bonus episode. So head on over there. Check us out. You can also follow us on Twitter at @thePOD_cast, again, cast with a K. That's where we do all the polls and everything like that. It's a great thing to do. Brian, before we go, we always do a challenge based on the album. Last month, the challenge was Sugar Ray's Floored, and the challenge was to write a song based off of a sound effect. You chose your knife. I chose a laugh track. You won. You beat me quite handily. So that brings the overall record up to 8 wins for you, 10 wins for me, and 1 tie. And the challenge this month, Brian, you actually came up with the challenge this month. So do you want to tell the listeners what it is?
Yeah, we're going to put make a new metal spell, which we're going to cast a new metal spell. And my spell is to get Limp Bizkit to finish up this album.
Stampede of the Disco Elephants.
I'm putting a spell out there, and this is like my chant. I can't believe I'm about to do this. You know how embarrassed I am to make these noises, but you're not. Wait and bleed. I felt the hate rise up in me. And there we go. That's going to be it.
That was good. I like that.
I wanted to do half, John, because I saw this picture this week of Corey Taylor, Jonathan Davis, and David Draymond. And it really made me consider like how cool a fucking acapella band of those three guys singing could be, you know?
Yeah,
like really they could do some fucking wild shit with like Corey singing, right? I found the air rise up in me, and Jonathan scatting, you're not right, not. And then you got to throw in a wah, and people would fucking, that would sell 5 million albums in a time where things don't even sell that many albums
you and
anymore.
I would buy a million, just the two of us probably.
I would do that. Yeah.
Okay. So mine, it's funny that you chose Limp Bizkit because mine is also related to Limp Bizkit. This is the chant that I imagined Fred did. This is the spell that Fred did to bring Wes Borland back to Limp Bizkit after results, after results may vary. And he realized, you know what? I really need Wes back in the band. I want to bring him in. So he started doing a spell, and he called his good friend Sully. He was like, Sully, I've never done a spell before. What can I do? And Sully said, listen, it's a religion. Okay. You can't just cast spells. Fred said, look, Sully, I don't have time for that. Just tell me how to do it. And Sully's like, well, first of all, to chant, you got to chant like me. And so this is the chant that they came up with. Where you at? Jacksonville, Rochester, Louisville, Columbia, Hartford, Milwaukee, and Lewiston, Maine. West Borland, Providence, West Borland, Nashville, Memphis, Lauderdale, Portland, Orlando, Chicago, and Frisco.
John, that's insane. But I love it. It's less insane than mine, really, to tell you the truth.
I mean, I think they were both pretty insane because we're very stupid.
I do think that, like, it would be great if Fred announced in the next, like, let's give my spell 2 months to work. Okay. It's, I've put it out there.
Yeah.
If he announces it within these 2 months, the next 2 months,
we can only assume the spell works.
Will become Wiccan. Yes. I will personally, that's the deal. I will become Wiccan.
Okay. So that's a great deal.
Sully, if you're looking for like a new Wiccan guy, maybe get a hold of Fred and tell him all he has to do is announce that they're making it.
And you're in. You'd be Wiccan. I love that. That's so funny. Okay. Well,
I'll get the tattoo. I'll get the motherfucking Sully Yarner belly button tattoo.
I would love to see you with the belly button tattoo. I'll be honest.
That would be my only tattoo, John.
I know. Don't have any tattoo. That's why I really want you to have it. Because people probably imagine, oh, Brian does street fight, you know, whatever. They probably imagine that you have a few tattoos, and I know that you don't. So that's so fun. You get your first tattoo as a man in your 40s, and it's a tribal sun around your belly button.
My wife would love it.
Oh yeah, she'd be all over that shit. The late girls, yeah. Girls love that stuff, right? That's why Sully did it.
Yeah.
But
then I would tell her we could only the only music we could ever play during sex is Moon Baby. Whatever that song's. Yeah. Moon Baby. Sorry, I got the tattoo now, and this will all happen
if
Limp Bizkit, if my spell worked.
I love it.
2 months.
I love it.
Okay.
Incredible. I love something with really high stakes and no reward for you. That's the best, the best thing to me. So this is normally the part of the podcast where we do the poll. So if you've never listened to the show before, what we do is we nominate 4 albums, 2 each, Brian and myself, to put up on the poll consideration to be reviewed next month. But we're doing something a little different this month because as we said, Brian and I have been reviewing new metal singles over on our Patreon. We do 2 of those a month. They're just short little fun episodes where we review a classic new metal single. And we've heard some singles from bands over the course of, we've now done 11 of them. The 11th one will be coming out shortly after you hear this episode. We've now recorded 11, and there's some bands that Brian and I have heard on the singles episode where we're like, okay, we like this band. We would love to hear more from this band. And so these are 4 bands from the singles episodes that we thought we'd like to dig into a little bit more. So the 4 albums that are going up on the poll next month are Flyleaf's self-titled debut album, Sunk Lodo, Big Picture Lies, So Tai G, 6, and Edema's self-titled debut, Edema. So those are the 4 options for next month: Flyleaf, Sunk Lodo, So Tai G, and Edema. Brian, do you have one of those that you kind of hope would win, or that you really want to dig into?
I think the 2 that I'm interested in, I would like to listen to. I can't ever remember the name. Sio Taggio.
So Tai G.
So Tai G. Okay. I would like to listen to that. But also, I'm endlessly interested in Edema now. And that is something that, because we just reviewed one of their singles and I really liked it. So Edema, I think Edema is maybe, Edema or Sotaiji are my two highest ones, but really any of them.
Yeah,
would be interesting.
I think
at
it's
least.
Funny.
I've never
like,
heard any of
I
them.
Would probably choose the other two as my like two favorites. Although Sotaiji is really interesting just from the whole like him and his boy band basically inventing K-pop. And then he just like does a nu metal album for some reason is really interesting. But I think the Flyleaf song is like probably my favorite one of the singles we've done just from like a pure enjoyment standpoint. I think that's like such a really fun song. So I'd be curious to hear more. And I always love like female lead vocals in nu metal. And then I just thought the Sunk Lodo was really interesting. It was like a band of like 16-year-old Australians and it sounded like science time period Incubus, which was very intriguing to me as well. So like you said, I think all four are good options. It's interesting that you and I have two that we prefer more than the other two. But yeah, I think it's going to be a really close poll and I'm excited to dig into something that's maybe a little bit less mainstream for next month. So those will go up later this month on our Twitter at the POD_cast with a K. So if you want to vote in the poll, make sure you follow us so you can see when those polls go live. And again, you can donate to the Patreon at patreon.com/thepodcast, and we'll see you back here next month with one of those four albums. Bye.